Welcome back to the Reptiles With podcast. Today we have another controversial topic.
Woo-hoo!
So we're going to talk wholesaling reptiles. I know that it can be a little bit of a tense subject because, you know, when people think wholesaling reptiles, the first thing that they might think about is imported animals. They might think of too much death or a mass death. They might even think parasites and all this stuff.
They might think sickly animals.
They might...
Sickly reptiles, you know.
You're an idiot. but we're here with Alejandro and Alex, the owner and the wholesale manager of Imperial Reptiles. They have a wholesale division, and we're going to see what they're doing better than their competitors. So let's have that topic.
It's podcast time!
You're so disgusting.
Topic, how you guys doing?
It's cool, man. I'm
great.
Good, man.
Nice. Amazing.
Amazing. You've had a great weekend, right?
Yeah, great.
What did you
weekend.
Do this weekend? Specifically reptile related. I don't care about anything else.
Well, I won't say what I did today.
Okay.
I'll say I went to Ron St. Pierre's house.
Nice. Yeah, yeah,
just hung out. And that's it.
Fire, dude.
How was that?
It was good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
They got to talk to gnolls and lizards?
Yeah, we talked.
Yeah.
Cool.
And, you know,
why do you have to say it like that? Yeah, we talked.
Let's just leave it at that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. I don't know what else they did.
No.
I don't know.
What'd you do?
Well, nothing reptile related, so I guess Tino doesn't care.
No.
All right, so wholesaling reptiles. Tell me about Imperial's efforts wholesale-wise. What's going on?
Well, this kind of is something that I guess was a natural progression of things as we kept, you know, growing.
Yep.
This was the next step. It was kind of just sourcing things ourselves. Kind of how we started, why we started wholesaling is just we needed more stuff.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. We needed more access to people's animals. When I was in Miami, I was able to handpick everything.
Mm. Yeah.
I went to everybody's facilities and handpicked everything by hand. When we got up here and we started receiving things shipped in, the quality of the stuff really went down.
Mm.
And that's really when I realized that there is a bigger issue at hand when it comes to wholesaling animals and receiving animals from these companies, because at the end of the day, it's a living animal. It's perishable. Let's talk about it in a business sense. It's a perishable good,
uh-huh.
Right? So if you don't have access to select what you're getting, and the company's only, their only like terms of service or like their only thing is that the animal's going to arrive breathing, right?
Yeah.
Breathing, or if you don't like it, you know, you can let them know. But for the most part, breathing is what they say. Then you're kind of like shit out of luck. And I didn't think that was right. I felt outed, you know, as a business and as a customer, I kind of felt like, damn, that kind of sucks. So I kind of wanted a better access to things. I wanted to have a selection of things that I could offer the customers, pretty much hand picking, being direct to us. I don't have to worry about it going somewhere else. And it just comes directly to us and we can hand pick and then select to our customers. And then naturally, of course, there's going to be excess, right? And then what do we do with that if our customers aren't buying everything? Well, we can offer to different companies. Now, excess doesn't necessarily mean bad quality. And I guess that's where the distinction comes into place, right? It comes into like the procedures, how we care for the animals, how long we have the animals before they go on to sale, our actual like suppliers, you know? We're not just dealing with anybody, no matter where they are in the world. We're not just dealing with anybody. And we make sure that we're initially getting great stock to start off with. And it just starts off like we'd never send somebody to somebody that they couldn't put, you know, for sale on their shelf.
I was going
to
ask, how many places do you think, I guess, percentage wise or a ratio, like are just retail?
Like in what sense?
Like in the sense that they just bought an animal from, like, say, another company and then put it for sale in their own company, and then now they have that animal for sale. Obviously, they have to bump up the price in order to make any kind of profit, but how many places do you think are like that rather than wholesale, actual wholesale operations?
Well, I don't think any place would be like that.
That wouldn't be practical.
That wouldn't be profitable.
No, it's not possible.
No.
Yeah, no.
Hmm.
I think that something – so people might think that Imperial is – buying stuff from other wholesalers and then wholesaling that, and I think that is not something that is happening.
No,
you guys are bringing in specific countries. I mean, that's
that's why we brought Alex aboard. Yeah. Alex had been doing that on his own with OTW Exotics, and we were able to kind of link up and bring
him. What does OTW mean?
Out of this world.
Only the wiener.
On the way.
On the way.
So, you know, he was kind of doing that on his own. And, you know, I think, you know, if you were limited by space and you were kind of limited by facilities.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's kind of something that I was able to facilitate. You know, we were able to bring him over here, you know, give him a salary and, you know, have him do what he's good at. And, you know, he communicates with these people really well. He's able to let them know what we want, and he's able to communicate that extremely well with them and make them understand that, you know, hey, you know, we're not messing around. What we want is the quality stuff.
Yeah. Mm. Now, what countries are we working with?
Right now, Africa, Suriname.
Africa's not a country.
Oh.
Continent. It's fine. It's fine. Where are we?
Ghana.
There you go.
Ghana. Ghana, Suriname, Nicaragua, hopefully soon.
Yeah.
Egypt, hopefully soon. Solomon, hopefully soon.
Okay.
Malaysia, hopefully soon.
All of the above.
Europe, yeah, all these places.
Yeah, all of the above pretty soon. But, like, routinely, like, what we've been doing and something that Alex was doing before was, you know, bringing in Suriname and then bringing in the entire continent of Africa.
There's nothing better than the smell of coffee in the morning, okay? There's also nothing better than the smell of reptiles in the morning. Psych. Reptiles with coffee. That's the smell you want. The strongest coffee, all right? We have it for you. Head on over to the description or go to coldbloodedcaffeine.com and use the code reptileswith to get your reptiles with coffee today.
Procedures, something that is down pack here. You know, things don't go from, from other country to bin.
Yeah, from a bag to a bin.
Yeah, from a bag to a bin. Things don't do that. Can you talk about the procedures?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to give away everything that we do with the animals. I just wouldn't. But the animals definitely, when they come in, we make sure that everything gets hydrated. We make sure that the things that need to get treated. And we get them feeding when they're ready to get fed. You know, a lot of it, when it comes to this stuff, I think it's timing.
Yeah.
You know, when you're bringing in these animals, it's the timing of stuff. You can't bring in a fresh animal and pump them with medicine. You can't get in a fresh animal and pump them with food. You can't get a fresh animal. And some animals, you can't even pump them with water. Because if you pump some of these fresh animals with water, they just like, oh my gosh, water. And they just drink, and they just
clean water before.
And they just kill themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's the knowledge through, you know, time, through, you know, mistakes. You know, tons and tons of, you know, mistakes and, you know, trial and error and, you know, talking to people and asking questions and seeing when you go handpick stuff at facilities, you know, seeing how they do things and asking questions and trying to make sense of this thing, because acclimating an animal, right?
Yeah.
And keeping an animal as a pet and keeping animal as a breeding animal are completely different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that, as you get more advanced into the hobby and, you know, whether you get into business or whatever aspect of the hobby you're in, you can make those clear distinctions.
Yeah. I'd like to emphasize that once you get an animal in, that doesn't mean you can immediately pump them full of anti-parasitides. The amount of people that I've talked to, they've asked, oh, how long have you had this animal? I'm like, oh, a couple months. And then they say, oh, have you treated it yet? Yeah. I'm like, no, it's not ready for that. It has to be a good weight.
It hasn't even given us a reason to treat it. Yeah, you know, the animal's pooping fine, eating a bunch of food, you know, like, I guess, like, it's just not common knowledge. Like, people don't even think about it. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I even think we have parasites, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think every animal has a parasite inside of our, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's normal for these animals to have parasites. You know, parasites are not necessarily a bad thing. Overload of parasites are a bad thing. Mm-hmm. You know, when these animals are, you know, stressed out and, you know, they're not kept correctly. Yeah.
I've talked,
you know.
But I have
industry that created that.
What do you mean?
Just the whole parasite thing.
All
parasites are bad. Gotcha. We need to get all the parasites out right when they get here. No. Imports are bad.
I think, honestly, for a lot of it, so for instance, let's say like Europlatus geckos, they don't really, they're not hiders. They don't hide in the wild, you know. But what they do is they use their camouflage to go ahead
blend in.
Because of that, they receive a lot of UVB exposure. Not necessarily something like the bearded dragon level, but when he comes into captivity and some people will just shove them into bins, it's like, hey, no, that animal's not going to do well. You need to have that animal give access to UVB because, most animals are going to come in with some form of parasites. And because of that natural UVB exposure, that natural heat, that natural diet, they are easily able to keep that parasite load down. Their immune system is fire. But all of a sudden, stress, dehydration in a bin, that animal's not going to do well. That animal's going to die because you are not providing that animal what it needed to survive in the wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think with Europlatus, that's a big mistake for most people.
Yeah.
They think like, oh, we're not going to put like any amount of UVB on it. We're not going to give it any kind of like just stick it in a bin and be done with it.
Yeah, and on the thing with parasites, you know, with snakes specifically, you know, everybody's always worried about them. It's an imported snake. It has mites.
Yeah.
Mm.
You know, everybody always assumes the imported snake has mites. And I think that...
Calumets don't get mites.
You're so
we deal with more mites from our captive bred suppliers of snakes than we do with our wild caught suppliers. Yeah. And that's just
that's just
fact.
That there's mites here.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Then not to say there's mites here. Like I'll be open to talk about it. I mean, the last time we had a mite scare was one of our local suppliers, which we're not gonna name. He brought them in. We noticed them immediately. They immediately, like, everything was sprayed, treated, locked in a room where it's near nothing, and the customer came, picked it up, and off he went, and nothing ever popped up.
Yeah.
When you deal with hundreds of snakes, thousands of animals by this point over the years, I mean, you're bound to encounter things, simple things like mites, because let's be honest, are mites really, like, scary? Like, abundance of mites is, but if you have one animal that pops up, you know, get it with mites, it isn't the end of the world. It's easy to control if you have procedures in place.
The actual concern is not the, oh, I found one mite. It's that mite might have touched another animal with a disease.
Correct.
But that's my stuff.
That's somewhat their fault for not quarantining the animal. Not knowing what they're looking for, not being prevalent about, like, hey, for instance, one of my animals when I first got it, all my animals, regardless, go through like at least a 3-month quarantine, right? Put them on paper towels, or sometimes cocoa, depending on what they need. Very sterile conditions, fresh water, and a bin.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll add a heat pad for it if I know they need it.
Yeah.
And that animal doesn't see – I service that animal last. I feed that animal last. That animal doesn't see any other animal at any point. And a lot of people think, like, they don't do that. You need to do that no matter where you're getting it from, no matter if it's captive born, no matter if you know the seller. You need to be quarantining your animals because anything is possible. Anything can happen.
Yeah.
So,
and that's why we treat – when it comes to snakes – and I'll say 95% of snakes, because there is a certain percentage of snakes that can't be applied with the medication
that we use. I would say most pythons and boas, some colubrids.
Yeah.
You know, they can – I mean, for the most part, all animals can handle a soak with a little bit of Dawn dish soap. And, you know, that cleans them up, gets in between their scales, pushes out any gunk. And then you just dry them off, put a little bit of treatment.
We use the front line, which we have a whole blog on the website with how to treat, you know, an animal if you find it with mites. And you could use the products that we put on there. So like Yoshi said, it's just a soak with water at first so that they can drink. And then we add some Dawn dish soap. We, you know, kind of mix it up, make sure it creates like that bubbles and suds, get in between the scales, and it pushes out any dirt or any mites that might be in there and floating in the water. And then if it has mites, you'll see it. You know, you'll see them floating in the water, and then you'll have to treat anyways. But regardless, we treat every majority of snakes that come in, whether they have anything or not. And for real, knock on wood, we really haven't had any issues in, you know, very, very,
and
very
today
long time.
We got mites. No, it's good to keep things clean, right? It's good to keep things thriving. It's good to keep things alive. Another concern that a lot of people have when they think of wholesaling is the amount of death. Everybody thinks that, damn, like, you just got a shipment in, half of the animals are dead. And in my experience, that's actually not the case when you have a solid supplier.
Yeah.
How would you say, you know, what would you say you do to avoid death? What do you do when animals come in a little bit skinny? And then what are, like, dispel some of the myth about the import death?
Yeah, I mean, you want me to...
I mean, the import death, it kind of is a thing, but with, like, larger quantities. And then, again, dealing with the supplier, I mean, it depends who you're getting from.
Yeah.
And time of year and what country.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a bunch of factors that play into death. But, I mean, if you bring it in the right time of year with the right supplier, you should only be looking at, like, 5%.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, like, we have to remember that the supplier is a business as well, right? Okay. The business wants to create a rapport. They want to make good business.
Yeah.
They're not going to send you bad stuff.
Not in the business of sending you shit.
Correct. And I think that's where it all starts, you know? Like, we're not 20 years ago, you know? This is, what are we, 2023, you know? We got the internet. It's easy to communicate with people. And they're in the business to do good business. So
even
it all starts with receiving good stuff. Like, the stuff is coming in really good.
I was going to say, even if you think the extent, like they say the argument, oh, it's wild caught, it's wholesale, you shouldn't be complaining, you know? You're getting the animal for best to nothing.
That's part of the problem, right? That's why we wanted to do something different. Like, that shouldn't be the answer. You know, at the end of the day, like, we should have some respect for they're living animals. You know, we should have some respect for them. And no matter what the cost is, the business that is purchasing these animals from us, you know, they're a mom and pop shop, you know, like, they have employees, like, they have bills to pay for, like, they need that animal to live. They don't need that animal to go on a shelf and die on them. Or worse, that animal go on a shelf, go to a customer, die on the customer.
Yeah.
So it's just all encompassing, and it's difficult because it's live animals, right? So you said the whole thing with death, and the, you know, people perceive and think, oh, it's a lot of death, it's a lot of death, and that's the problem, right? People think a lot.
Yeah.
People don't know anything, right? Yeah. Only the people that are in this, people that have worked in a reptile shop, people that have worked, not even a reptile shop, like, I mean, a reptile shop like ours, you know, that has a lot of movement, that has a lot of things happening, more than just selling, you know, pet supplies and pets to pet owners. We do more than that. That's pretty much it, man.
Do you guys think that even if the death, because death happens, is unavoidable in some cases.
Yeah, when you're working with animals. Yeah. For sure.
Do you think that even if it's a little bit, like, let's say like a 5%, that it's worth it, that it's still worth it, that we can still do
it? Well, in every industry, there's loss, right? When you look at a food industry, you know, how much food is thrown away out of Publix every night?
Hundreds.
Right? You know, out of restaurants, how many, you know, plates are thrown out?
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to, let's say, vehicles, how many vehicles are just lemons and don't make it to the end because they didn't pass some sort of inspection? I think in every industry, unfortunately, there's loss. And like
but
I said,
but is it not different when we talk about live animals?
And that's what it comes to. I mean, it's livestock, right? Mm-hmm. You know, but unfortunately, there is a livestock industry. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking life in any industry, there's going to be loss, you know?
Yeah.
It comes to what I was saying. It's like knowing what you're getting yourself into, you know, right? Unfortunately, it's their livestock, man. Anything that lives dies.
Yeah, I think that it's definitely not the death stuff is not as bad as what the public might seem. And something that does get done here that I think is important is just because like a retail company like this also has a wholesale division doesn't mean that their wholesale customers are getting B grade animals because the retail side wants to keep the best stuff. It's like, oh, this is B grade or this is questionable right now. Let's make sure that this animal is thriving before it goes to anybody.
Correct. And that's, you know, we'll treat them with antiparasitics if we got to treat them, you know, anything. If we really got to take an animal to a vet, you know, we have a local vet that we would have to take the animal to, you know, the animals that we have a tagging system. Anytime that an animal is not fit for sale, it is in the back of house. It is not in the front and it gets tagged and, you know, it gets noted and we keep an eye on that animal. You know, everybody here, you know, when they're working the front and they're servicing the animals, they're also looking at the animals, you know, and if something is questionable for sale, it gets taken to the back. Everybody here loves animals and everybody here kind of, you know, loves working with the animals and, you know, they may not necessarily, you know, enjoy the retail portion. I don't think, you know, there's many people that enjoy, you know, working retail. But I think that at the end of the day, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a good thing happening here. You know, it's the good thing about having a lot of stock is that you're like physically able to put aside the questionable stock, and you can, you know, sell the good stuff. And while that stuff is quote unquote getting quarantined, getting special treatment, by the time that there, you know, the quote unquote good stuff is gone, that stuff's already thriving.
It might be, or you know, the truth of the matter is sometimes like that good stuff just kind of just, you know, just wasn't going to thrive at all, you know, and that's like the hardest part, you know. That was a lot of the conversations that I was having with him before I really decided, you know, that we wanted to take the step. Was that something that, you know, we were willing to do? Because that is the reality of it, you know.
If you want to support us, head on over to modernreptileshop.com or in the description where you can find our merch. And the best part is that a percent of the proceeds from the merch gets donated to conservation. One more time, that's modernreptileshop.com or head on over to the description.
I think some of the problem that people have, though, is that any death is too high a cost. And so with we were talking earlier about an earlier podcast about a PETA scenario. Where they had put a post, we've talked about it before off the podcast, but that 75% of animals, reptiles, well, I think it was reptiles.
It was reptiles.
Yeah, 75% of reptiles die within for the first year within the new home, within the new place that they're in. Whether that's an import animal, I just bought it from a pet store, captive born, whatever. That 75% are experiencing death. Do you guys think that is an accurate or close to accurate number?
I have like a, I don't know. My response to that is like, how many people die within their first year of life? You know what I mean?
Two.
You get what I'm saying? Like newborns, like people, like people die every day, dude. Yeah, like I'm pretty sure that the number may be high of animals that go home, you know, may die, you know, misinformation from customers not taking care of their animals, you know, how can we control everybody?
Right.
You know, how can we do that? I don't know.
I don't know.
You didn't even want to know.
No, I don't
Alex was laughing when I first said it. He was like, there's no way it's that high.
There, I mean, I don't think so.
But I don't think it's that high. Be a possibility. Yeah, I think the number's exaggerated, but to
I don't think that they have actual data for that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's real data, but it's just a number they threw out there to generate a response from people because they could.
Of course.
But to say that, oh, there is no, you know, death, you know, but our customers come back and they're happy, right? We don't deal with a lot of customers that are coming in here unhappy with the majority of the animals that they buy.
We've been open 2 years. I'm like, am I seeing 75% of the customers that I've put in here? Or am I seeing 25, sorry, because they're the ones that are still alive.
Yeah.
Am I seeing 25% of the customers that are coming back? And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, I'd say at least 25.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say a fourth of them.
And there's more coming.
Yeah, we have a lot of regulars. Though, yeah. We have a lot of regulars.
Yeah.
For sure. Now, how do you become a Imperial Wholesale customer?
You be a business. Yeah. Yeah.
Describe a business. That's vague, bro.
Yeah. So if you sell reptiles, right? If you vend at shows, if you have an online store, if you have a retail shop, if you have any business that involves animals, you know, we are here to help you and, you know, provide quality animals and hopefully soon even supplies. Yeah.
Quality.
Speaking of quality, I was going to ask, do you think that from a wholesale perspective, a wholesale of import wild caught animals reduces the, or I guess destabilizes a possibility to have a captive born market for certain animals. For instance, let's say with savannas. Savannas have basically no captive born weight.
Very
few people are breeding savanna monitors captive.
Do you know why?
And I was going to say, I'm like, maybe they're difficult animals to just keep and regular because you need space, you need time, all this stuff is a factor. They're monitors, and people usually don't take care of them properly anyways. Do you think that because of the import numbers that keeps the price low of wild caught imports, that it makes it hard for someone to go ahead and develop a captive born market for them?
All right, yeah, he's not in the talking room today, dude. Yeah, he's buffering today. No, I don't.
Okay.
I think in any essence, in the current market, the way it's set up, I think it helps the person that's actually breeding them, right? There is 5,000 baby savannah monitors, you know, imported, ranched from, you know, Africa, and I've got 20 U.S. captive born and bred savannah monitors for sale, right? So for the customer that is looking for U.S. captive born and bred, because they want it to be U.S. captive born and bred, right? They can find that customer and it'll be easy for them to find them, right?
Yeah.
And now the problem is, what's the difference between a U.S. captive born and bred savannah monitor and a captive hatched savannah monitor from Africa?
It could be a lot.
Could be.
It could be, yeah. You could be looking for like really high end, like for instance,
I would argue that the stress from that shipment from country to country, the difference in barometric pressure, temperatures all around, honestly, that is a big difference. But I would say specifically with savannah monitors.
I was going to say quality of an animal.
Yeah.
Like with Arid's only, he breeds Uromastix Gairy, and he has some very beautiful animals, very yellow, neon orange. But imports don't look like that.
Yeah, but
hardly, because he's line breeding. He's developing a captive born stock.
If we can get somebody to breed them enough, where there's enough supply captive bred that's reasonably priced, then we wouldn't need to offload more from the wild.
But how do they accomplish that if everyone wants the cheaper, the faster, the easier?
It's time. The answer is time. The answer is time, and somebody doing it right and not being a gatekeeper. The answer is, hey, let the time go by. Let a lot of people breed these animals, and eventually we might not need to bring in, let's say, 1,000 Uromastix.
But then is wholesale possible after that point?
Yeah, because absolutely.
Now there's an abundance.
Yeah, there's still – I'm still –
Of captive born.
Tino, the breeder of that abundance of animals, some of them don't have the capacity to move that amount of animals.
No, yeah, yeah.
They don't have – so there's still needs for distributors.
Yeah. With,
it would be the same case.
Yeah. With isopods or springtails, I have too many. I don't have any storefront. I don't have a website. I don't care to deal with customers at all. I bring them here and I'm like, hey, Alex, you want to buy some?
And it kind of becomes that. So as, you know, if that were to be the case where there would just be more captive bred, you know, animals available for sale than there was imports and it was easier to get them captive bred, then the imports would kind of just phase out and then people would just buy the captive bred stuff.
Is somebody, enough people that are both hobbyist and business savvy enough to reproduce them in mass over the next few years. And then,
but you don't think that because of an imported wholesale market that deters people from wanting to
do that? No, dude, it's supply and demand, right? And the pet, when you're talking pets, people like colors. And people like patterns, and people like different stuff. Savannah monitors, there's been an albino that popped up, never bred anything. There's been like an ivory or something that popped up or something like that, and never bred. So I think that is a part of it. I'm pretty sure if there was an albino Savannah monitor, bro, you would see a lot more captive bred Savannah monitors. Yeah, the thing with the Savannah monitors is that they breed super young. You know, when I labeled those adults, and you guys are like, those are not adults. Those well, are that's
for
the
me,
size.
Adults is sexually, that's the size, sexually mature.
That's sexually mature. Yeah, they are laying eggs at eight, you know, like 8 months old in the wild.
Most
they are reproducing, laying eggs. Like that's the size that they breed at. So, you know, I think with that, nobody's figured it out. You know, there's a couple people that do, but that's what they figured out. They breed super young and really small.
I do think it's a case by case, but depending on the animal. The thing is with Savannah, I mean. That's a very, very cheap monitor. You know, anybody gets that.
They eat them over there.
Yeah. The skincare is huge. Do you think there's – is there an attempt being made to kind of push these animals into the proper hands to go ahead and reduce any wild-caught animals? Like, for instance, oh, we're going to wholesale to people that – let's say, like, Arizona, we're wholesaling to them so they can go ahead and start producing some captive horn stock.
Some stuff.
Yeah, some stuff. Like, let's say tomorrow the cat-eye geckos became super popular, right? Like, the most popular thing in the world. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to be like, damn, we got 10 of these cat-eye geckos. Let's offer some really good deals for half of them to this guy that I know is going to breed them. So that way he can start captive breeding them. And then, you know, I'll give him some new stock. Now he has a plethora. And now I'll get some of the babies captive bred and then create more of an awareness.
I know you specifically have instances where you specifically did that before.
Plenty of times,
Yeah.
Just hand it off. Basically,
yeah, you see a nice animal, and you're like, off. I'm gonna give it to so and so.
Yeah, when I did my own thing, I definitely kind of just gave it at cost just to see what they could do with it.
It's not so much that the import market needs to go away more than it is like,
no, nothing wrong with imports.
Yeah,
it's like wild caught imports would be the issue.
There needs to be an understanding, that's it,
and that's it.
Yeah, and there needs to be an awareness that the goal for all of that is to create more captive bred stock for a healthier hobby in general. So the import and the wholesaling side of it will never go away. So
what about animals? Like we said, Savannah monitors are very difficult. Let's say machete snakes is another instance. Do you think that these animals are just animals that we should not be importing anymore? We should not be offering at wholesale anymore because nobody is able to do this right. People are struggling very hard to do this.
I think if people wanted to breed Savannah monitors, they would breed Savannah monitors. They're just too lazy to breed Savannah monitors.
Because they see, like, damn, what am I going to breed this for, you know, they're going to have to wholesale it for $20.
No, I mean, if you truly love the animal, you would do it regardless.
But you don't think that's because the price is low? The price is low.
I mean,
people are like, oh,
that's
I don't
a business
I
mean, decision, right? If you're a business and you're in business because business got to make money, which for I don't know why whenever we're talking animals and money, like there's always like some people get really touchy about it, but there's no need to be, right? You know, it's a business. We got to make money, and as a business point, right? If you're looking at Savannah monitors and you're just trying to breed regular Savannah monitors, and you're like, all right, well, I got to make this profitable. It's just not there.
But a business isn't going to breed a Savannah monitor. It'd be a hobbyist,
and all for that. Every hobbyist, if you love Savannah monitors, you should try to breed your Savannah monitor.
Exactly, but what I'm saying is that the people are lazy and they don't want to do it. Like, if you truly love the animal and you don't care about the profit, then you would just do it.
But if
you truly want to establish something you like believe in, then you would do it.
I know. Right. Oh, sorry. I know Northern Lights.
Ashley.
Ashley. Yeah. She says that she's an importer from Canada. She's been importing machete snakes. And she
Skrillis,
says, like,
yes.
Several of them die. Like, almost all of them.
Well, those are really difficult
die.
Because they have worms in them.
And so she is like, oh, I'm going to take it upon myself to go ahead and keep all of the ones that I get back and try to keep them alive to try to and import frogs that they eat, all this stuff, try to do it better so that now she's not experiencing so much death in the animals that she's selling to her customers or clients or whatever.
If you're listening to this, you're a reptile lover, all right? And what do we all need? We need supplies. So we got you covered. Head on over to imperialreptiles.com and use the code REPTILESWITH to get a specific discount special to us and our listeners for your reptile supplies today. One more time, that's imperialreptiles.com. Use the code REPTILESWITH.
With the answer,
start bringing savannas, dude.
I'll do it tomorrow.
I mean, in the case of the machete snakes and like what you said, is that an animal that we should be bringing in and stuff? We talked about it. Right, that's why we don't bring a bunch of them, and that's why they're not up front for sale for our pet customers. That we are a reptile specialty store, mm-hmm. and not only do we sell beginner animals, we sell intermediate advanced animals. Mm-hmm. The machete snake falls under that intermediate advanced. We have access to it. We have access to good machete snakes. Mm-hmm. You know, the person who's getting them is taking good care of them, sending good quality stuff. They're feeding. Mm-hmm. You know, we've sold it to, you know, multiple customers that have had no issues getting the animals feeding on lizards and things mm-hmm. like that. So if we have the access to, and there's people out there that are understanding what they're getting themselves into and have a goal in mind with what they want to do with that snake, I think that is like the sweet spot, right? Mm-hmm. We're not bringing in 100 of them. Mm-hmm. You know, there might be, you know, three or five.
I would say that that's a good point of just in general about running a business is just having the dignity to know, like, hey, like, we don't have to sell it because we can sell it. It's like we're not going to do
reptiles.
No, stupid. we're not going to do the thing just in abundance because we can. It's like we play it smart. You know, we know the kind – we know what our kind of like the image is, what we're trying to – the word isn't coming to me. Like what we're trying to show the customer base, you know,
right.
what we represent kind of thing.
Mm. We don't have black racers or southern toads on our website.
Yeah, look at him. Look at him.
This guy's like, yeah. Oh, I'm gonna try.
Yeah, but is there an animal that you guys like a specific animal that you're like, this needs to be imported more because there really would be a captive bred demand for this?
A lot of animals.
Like, give me some.
I mean, gonocephalus.
In English.
Exactly. I mean, blue-eyed crested dragons, any of the Malaysian stuff, any yeah. of the Suriname colubrids, I mean, all that stuff. Yeah. To me.
You really think
but that's to me.
Yeah.
This guy's no, like, I don't think there's a demand. I mean, yeah, I don't think there's
that's
a demand.
What I'm saying, like, in the general audience, like, I would say the pinnacle for the reptile hobby, for it to thrive, the retail locations... The animal needs to be able to sell in a retail location.
Easy.
Because that's when it hit, like, the mainstream. What animal do you think fits the retail market?
That's import wild caught.
Croc skinks.
Okay, that's
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really think that people can't get enough of those red-eyed yeah. croc skinks.
And it's
I'd say
weird.
I have two. Euromastics yes. and giant plato lizards.
No, there's no demand for captive bred Euromastics.
Yes, there
well,
is.
I think that
not gyri, no.
It's because gyri are ugly.
No, it's
they're not ugly.
What
they're
think,
not.
Yo?
Yeah,
what,
a lot
are
aren't ugly. A lot are really nice.
Awards. I mean,
because people don't see the pretty ones.
I think that the gyri do have a good chance of hitting the retail market because they sell very well.
There's albinos.
Oh, I didn't even know.
Oh,
so fucking cool.
Conception,
yeah, we saw
hypo-ornates.
So fucking
ornates.
Cool, dude. Yeah. Oh yeah, there's hypo-ornates.
That's insane.
I think that Euromastics are great. I think that is a good one. Species doesn't matter.
No bugs, just vegetables. Like.
Easy,
you know, the
keep
bold,
it hot, dry.
Not scared. They'll bask and colorful as hell. Like,
amazing.
Will come up to you and eat. Yeah, they yeah. square up. Yeah. I love your masks are really
your masks
cool.
are very
your
plated
are really
lizards.
Cool. And I was saying the plated lizards, yeah. dude. Look, I like them already visually. I myself have bought three imports, and they're doing fantastic. I mean, I wouldn't say myself I'm an expert by any means in any field, but. The fact that I've been able to take care of them, I've done one for at least a year. You know, they're doing really, really well. And some of these imports will eat out of my hands, no problem. I'm like holding the food, and they're like, "Oh, absolutely, please give me some." And I'm like, "Imagine a captive-born animal like this, like a baby plated lizard, would just be fantastic."
Why don't
Actually,
you do
that
it?
Could be the beardy.
Why don't you do it?
I will eventually.
Yeah, you gotta do it.
Gotta get the animals. Gotta get the animals to good weights.
You
I want to
make
sure
do
that they're
it,
healthy.
So then we can stop importing them, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Facts. That's what I'm doing. I'm gonna sell them cheaper than you guys.
Oh, you know what? People,
we'll buy them.
There you go.
People always think that imported means a wild animal.
No.
No.
Oh, yeah.
I would say that people yeah. would see, like, let's say a Morph Market, and you put the thing as imported, they're like, oh, there's a fucking wild
They'll ask you, yeah, is it wild
yeah,
caught?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, if they understand the difference.
Yeah, well, but I
think... A lot of people don't.
I think that's what I'm saying. Like, the majority of people see imported, and they already associate it's a wild animal.
Yeah.
When, like, a lot of these animals are captive hatched, they're a farm-bred animal, or they're just a captive-bred animal
and,
from another place.
And they're legitimate farms, man.
Yeah.
Legitimate farms yeah. with legitimate collectors and systems, and they harvest eggs, they have incubation rooms, they know when their babies are hatching, you know, like, they have everything in place, like, legitimate
some.
Farms.
What do you have to
some.
Say? What's that face?
I'm going
to
say some.
Maybe not Ghana.
Well, not all of them.
Not all
like
of them, but,
yeah.
but what I said there are some farms, and there are some legitimate farms
yeah,
out
yeah.
there.
Like,
we can't negate that either.
They have, like, a really nice farm in Peru where most of the caiman lizards come from.
Well, yeah, I would say Peru. I mean, our guy in Suriname.
The Indo stuff is usually...
Indo, yeah.
Yeah.
And when I used to get my stuff from... They had something over there,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, I think Africa is the only one that's a little different, but we have created a demand almost for the animals to stay alive in Africa, because we've created value for them to not just eat off the animal, because for as far as I understand, like, it's impoverished over there. You know, they need a, they need to find food. They need to do
all of Africa.
We're saving.
No, not all of Africa. I'm not trying to generalize over.
We're saving the savannah monitors.
We save them by bringing them here and selling them for whatever they sell for.
$49.99
Wow, baby savannahs this week.
The United States does the U.S. have any farms?
Yes, turtle farms, man.
Yeah,
but only turtles.
No, well,
I don't see any farms for like black racers, coke whips.
I mean, would you consider Ron St. Pierre's place a farm? That's a farm. That's a farm.
Yes,
but that's the standard then for there.
Farm.
No, we call it a farm over there because they're not so advanced. I guess I don't know.
That's racist.
Don't give them that.
No, that's racist.
No, for real. I don't know.
No, but I would say that the closest thing would be like the style that like Ron St. Pierre
because it's more developed.
What do you mean?
Like, we're a more developed nation. We can provide, let's say, better enclosures, larger enclosures, more specific animals, higher detailed animals. Yeah. You know. Do you think that
the goal? United States is better than
No. Because I'm saying Europe markets. Europe markets are better than ours. They've got fire animals, fantastic animals than the ones produced in the U.S. For the stuff that I like.
They have racks.
But that's one of the reasons they produce amazing animals. They have to give their snakes UVB. That's why they look so good.
My ball python looks fine. At least one of them.
Do you think that there is a push to go ahead and get these farms where these animals are being held to like a higher standard?
Well, I think they have been. I mean, we just don't know it. But whoever is dealing with the farms is helping them. They're flying over there. They're showing them different things, and
I think
they evolve over time.
That's what I was going to say. That over time, things are just getting more sophisticated all around. Mm-hmm. Like, it definitely isn't like how I think you mentioned, like the Wild Wild West.
Yeah,
it definitely isn't like that anymore, because we've all heard stories. Mm-hmm. But now that we've been in this for such a long time, we can see that it's not really exactly like what it.
It's not all that crazy. It's it's pretty. What am I going to say? It's pretty consistent.
Yeah,
you know. It's,
you know what? Something that
easy.
I always thought. Back when I was doing import and exporting for general goods, right? I always thought bringing in animals used to take days, but it doesn't.
No, man.
It's a day, just like our fucking shipping here.
Yeah.
So the animals, believe it or not, they're not traveling as much as people think.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like, oh, somebody grabs an animal, let's say from the wild, and it stays in a bag or in a bin until, like, not fed, not taken care of. It's like, no, like, it gets...
Yeah, that doesn't...
Well, yeah. Some places that doesn't happen.
Well, there could be some places, but I'm saying
the
majority...
Issue, right? Yeah.
But that's why those people don't thrive, and yeah, they may do that for a little bit of time, but they're going to get knocked out by their competitors, because their competitors are doing it better.
Yeah.
Why do you think there's not more tours of farms, then? Why do you think more people... I know Dan Maliri shows the Indonesian farm.
Because that's
their
supplier. Why would you try to give your supplier away?
But more, you don't have to necessarily say who they are. You just say, hey, this is what they're
being cared for. Yeah, but people are greedy enough where they're just going to be like, I need to find
that.
That's what they did here.
Yeah,
what they did here, man. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a security thing. You know, you never want to give away your information of where you are.
Bro, look at how many times somebody, like, videotapes their fucking place and then they get robbed. You know, like, that's another thing, dude. That literally happened to...
But isn't that... It's pretty... It's kind of convenient. It's kind of convenient. It's smart from a business standpoint, because it's like, yeah, I don't want to give away my secrets. I don't want to show where I am. It's for my security, my safety. But also, it's for your client's safety, you know, because they don't see how you're taking care of these animals. They don't see the day-to-day and what's going
but
on.
That person isn't giving them the main care. It's the importer.
What?
You're saying that the clients want to see the farm and wherever.
Yeah.
But why? I mean,
see how the animals are taken care
of. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm
like,
pretty
sure. When customers come here, we're pretty transparent about how things are cared for. I don't like switch an animal into a better enclosure and be like, oh yeah, this is how we're keeping it. I'm like, no, this is high end stuff. This is how we're doing it. That's the deal. Obviously, I don't take people into the back room because, you know, like you said, there are some animals we need to put more focus on, make sure that they're doing
well.
And
I just wouldn't want to see it, because at the end of the day, we're a business, and the customer that's here for their pet does not need to see, you know, the Savannah monitors that look really thin but yet are pounding crickets, you know, and gaining weight and don't have a full understanding of what's going on. Mm-hmm. So, and that's it. It's having the full picture and being encompassing of everything, you know, just knowing the reality of the thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that people need to understand that it's not, the importing part of it is not as scary as what the public might make what the public might make it seem. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know,
you can get a shitty animal anywhere.
Yeah, that's a fact.
You can get a shitty. It doesn't have to come from another country. Dude. You can get one from next door.
Yeah. You can find one on Craigslist. It's crazy.
Literally.
Literally. But yeah, no, I think that there is a clean practice here. You know.
That's just the way I've always liked things done. You know, I don't see the need to not be that way. Like I said, I handpicked everything at the Miami store. I had like my 1 or 2 days a week that I would go and handpick everything. And I think that was a huge part of our success. And I just thought that other people should, you know, other businesses should have access to that. Like, there's no reason they should be getting crap.
And I think that this conversation is important because from the time that we've been into this, we know that there are sketchy places.
Yeah.
That's a fact. And being able to have this conversation brings transparency and say, hey guys, like, there is a clean practice here. If you're a store, if you're a vendor, if you're a specialized breeder, whatever it is, if you want to make a wholesale account, you can and be a part of what it is we're trying to do here. Have very safe practices because we all want a better hobby for tomorrow.
Absolutely. And if this is something that, you know, you think you may want to do, or, you know, it's something that you think you may want to work in, you know, just watch what we're doing, you know. You don't have to necessarily see everything. Just watch what you're doing, and you'll get an idea for how to do things the right way. Mm. It's not very complicated. Treat people nicely, you know, be a decent human being, treat the animals with respect, and in return, you know, things just seem to have finding a way to just work out.
Yeah. I've asked you before off camera, is there any reason you yourself would not want to be an exporter? Like to export animals within the United States that are wild caught.
What do you mean? Like export to other countries?
No, yeah, like, you're exporting like to other countries.
Like native, you're saying native animals in the United States, exporting them elsewhere.
Yes. Is there a reason you won't do it? Are you, like, because you haven't done it before, I don't think.
No, I haven't done it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I really haven't had the opportunity to.
Is there demand
as well
for, like,
there is a huge demand, yes.
Rattlesnakes, coach whips,
yeah.
Really?
For all that stuff. Yeah. I mean, you know.
But what's the legality on that stuff?
That's another thing.
Well, the other countries don't have
them. Well, indigos,
oh, they have reason of course they do.
Yeah, but you need a lot of high permitting systems to do it. But it's not like the U.S., it's impossible.
For what?
For exports.
He's saying that it's not impossible to do it in the U.S., so why is that not something that you currently offer?
We haven't gotten to it.
Yeah, you need to have...
Is that something that you would...
That's something I would do. The native stuff, I don't know. I mean
it depends. But that would be the...
It does depend on the species.
Of course, you're not going to be poking indigos and gopher turtles.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
The idea is not to poke. The idea is to do things...
But you would poke southern toads. And spade foots.
They love southern foots.
But yeah, no, I think that with the native stuff, I didn't know that there were like demand for like native shit elsewhere.
Oh, well,
yeah, because it's like other places that can't get it. Yeah, other places than the United States.
It's like what we're getting, there's demand for it because it's not here. Yeah. So it's not over there. Yeah, so they're like, oh yeah,
here. Those are big here. Can you imagine other countries? Yeah, they're losing.
No,
their
they
mind.
Buy a shit ton.
Who wants a black razor?
Russia.
Europe.
Yeah.
Why?
They're
because
fire, dude.
People
awesome.
Buy them over there. They
black
can't get them.
Black razors are fire.
What else?
Indigos. I'm not going to give away.
Green tree frogs.
No, we don't do green tree frogs.
Rattlesnakes. Rattlesnakes are
because
huge. Everyone wants rattlesnakes.
Because green tree frogs, their population is just decreasing and decreasing and decreasing.
See, that's why we don't do it. I don't even know.
Yeah. I mean, there is a lot of natives that aren't doing well. Because one, partly because we are a developing nation, we are taking their territory from them. So it's not like there are many species you can just send over.
Poach.
I mean, it is what it is.
Collect.
It is what it is. It's true. It's collect. Like no. It's like the whole
no.
Yeah, like the wild caught versus other kind of words that people try to use. It's like it's the same stuff.
I'm gonna add
it's the
that
same
word to like the things that we can't say.
So you're saying imported and farm bred and
no, because those are specifics. But when people try to say like. Reptile will say things like
field collected,
and it's like that's a wild caught animal. You know what that is.
That's what we put on our website.
But it's the stigma. But nobody wants a wild caught animal.
Correct, 100%. So you got to use a synonym.
Yeah,
but they still get it. It just sounds nicer.
No, they don't get it. People are stupid. They don't get it.
Well, there's difference because a wild caught animal is an animal that's like, I'm fucking wild, dude. The field collected when you're like, yo, you're in the field, come here, man. And they just come back to you. It's different.
The connotations. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, education and everything is knowing what you're getting yourself into, mm-hmm. you know, and that's just what it, that's just, yeah, that's, like, that's it. That's anything.
Chuck says, rescues is just flipping animals. And it's like, yeah, to an extent, I mean, that's the definition of the word. You're taking the animal in and bringing a new home. You're flipping it. You know, whether you do it for money or not, it doesn't matter. Whether you're
well, they have
ethically
to make some
or not,
money.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, or unless they're working for donations or whatever, but like,
yeah,
that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
There are people that do that.
Based on donations? No, like they run a whole rescue based solely on donations.
There's some, but there's some? They don't have that as their only, like, income. Yeah, oh, for sure.
Yeah, rescues are a labor of love. You have to want to do it.